It's a good day to be indigenous. Get up, stand
up. They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cuff, give me cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Hey, Cudahy to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Ahu, Ho-Chunk Raja, Wakunjahade, Hingadena. I'm your host, Wakunjahade, Distant Thunder. My colonized name is Robert Pilot. We discuss national, Twin City, Native American news and issues. As we all know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
And this segment is brought to you by the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 Hotline. You can call them at 651-304-9982. Six from Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. for your COVID-19 questions.
Yes, and we have a lot of questions. So next week we're going to make a phone call to them and on live. You know, just groundbreaking stuff we do here, Wendy.
It's fantastic. Yeah. I love it.
Hey, another thing too, I just want to remind our audience out there that, you know, we're on 5 days a week now from in the Twin Cities here, and we're really excited, and we're in Milwaukee and we'll soon to be in Chicago, and so we're really excited that these other stations are picking us up. Normally, we were a one-hour show on Saturdays and built to 2 hours, and we've been doing all these other productions of other shows, the symposium, and we always started our Native Roots Radio show with Oglema with the news. So why don't we start with Oglema with the news?
Hi, Bijou, everybody. I am Oglema Ganua Koi, and I am an enrolled member at Red Lake Nation, and I'm here with some news for you today. So first, I want to take some time to talk about some of the amazing events that are happening tonight surrounding the No Line 3 movement and the future of clean energy in Minnesota. I did mention these last night, but I just want to go over them again today, just so people know they're happening. So the Sierra Club, the Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light, Fresh Energy, and the Minnesota Public Interest Resource Group at the University of Minnesota Duluth have all partnered up to host an event called Reimagining the Northland's Energy Landscape. This event is tonight from 6 p.m. to 7:15 p.m., and it is virtual. So no matter where you are, you can participate in this event. You can RSVP by going to the Facebook page for any of the mentioned partners or by searching Reimagining the Northland's Energy Landscape on Facebook. Since this event is happening virtually, it's going to be a group event where people can get together online to build art. And this event is hosted by MN350, one of the major partners here. So what they're going to do is build art to support Indigenous-led frontlines resistance to the Line 3 pipeline. They want to send as much protest art as they can to the resistance. So the art you create is going to go to the GNU Collective first and then to Gitche Gumee Scouts, and then will be shared with others as capacity allows. Dates and times for drop-off sites are to be determined. I'm hoping they'll probably have a mail-in option too, but we'll see. But they're likely to be in Northfield and Minneapolis. And then there is a new event for next Friday. Camp McGizzy is hosting an event called Fry Bread Friday. So on January 22nd from 2 to 5 p.m. At Camp McGizzy on Magny Drive in Cloquet, Minnesota, there's going to be a fry bread feast with family, friends, and fellow water protectors. The event is to uplift the voices of the Anishinaabe, or First People, whose lands, water, and treaty rights are at risk and under attack by the Enbridge Line 3 pipeline. Per the event organizer and Camp McGizzy founder Tayshia Martineau, this event will also be an opportunity to perform direct action for those who are interested. In national news, I do have some information regarding the Trump administration's attempt to fast-track 2,500 acres of sacred Native American land to a mining company. So per Native News Online, the Oak Flat Project would transfer 2,500 acres that several Southwest tribes consider sacred and utilize for ceremonial purposes. The Trump administration's USDA Forest Service seeks to transfer Oak Flat, or Chichil Bildigotil, to the British Australian corporate mining giant Rio Tinto and its subsidiary Resolution Copper. This transfer has been pushed to happen by January 15th, which is tomorrow, and it's just 5 days before Biden will be sworn in as president. Apache Stronghold, on behalf of the traditional Apache religious and cultural leaders, sued the Trump administration on Tuesday in U.S. District Court in Phoenix to stop the transfer. The San Carlos Apache Tribe, White Mountain Apache Tribe, and hundreds of other Native American tribes opposed the transfer. Tuesday's lawsuit against the U.S. government says the giveaway and destruction of Oak Flat violates the Religious Freedom Restoration Act and the Apache's constitutional rights to religious freedom, due process, petition, and remedy. The giveaway is also a breach of trust and fiduciary duties. Oak Flat is located about 70 miles east of Phoenix on the Tonto National Forest on lands historically shared by multiple tribes, including the Apache, the Yavapai, the Peeposh, and the Uwadam people. Prior to the Trump administration's push, Oak Flat was protected from mining since 1955, when President Eisenhower protected the area for its cultural and environmental value. Rio Tinto, the company that stands to acquire the land, says that their Oak Flat mining project is expected to create a crater almost 2 miles across and more than 1,000 feet deep. So Oak Flat would be completely destroyed. In a little bit of light of good news, Deb Haaland, New Mexico Congresswoman and newly nominated Secretary of the Interior with the incoming Biden administration, has received her second shot of the COVID-19 vaccine. Her second dose was caught on video and posted to her social media pages on January 11th. In the video, Haaland is wearing a face mask and says, "Okay, guys, I'm getting my vaccine and it's totally fine. I hope that you'll get yours too when it's time." The congresswoman also added thanks to healthcare professionals working to prevent the spread of the virus. Vaccinations became available to lawmakers just before Christmas after an emergency approval by the Food and Drug Administration. All members of Congress and staff whose on-site presence is required were encouraged to schedule vaccination appointments. And just a little bit more, I guess this would be kind of more world news regarding the environment. Bill Gates is financially backing the development of sun-dimming technology to offset climate change. The Stratospheric Controlled Perturbation Experiment, or SCOPEX project, was launched by Harvard University scientists. So the solution they suggest would involve spraying non-toxic calcium carbonate dust into the atmosphere that would potentially reflect sunlight out of the Earth's atmosphere, triggering a global cooling effect. The calcium carbonate dust is a sun-reflecting aerosol that they hope may decrease the effects of global warming. Widespread research into these types of solar geoengineering projects has been stalled for years due to controversy. Opponents believe science like this comes with unpredictable risks, including extreme shifts in weather patterns, not unlike the ones we're already experiencing and witnessing. And environmentalists have feared that a dramatic shift in strategy for managing the global crisis would be treated as a green light to continue emitting greenhouse gases with little to no changes in current consumption and production patterns. Wow. So this is all per Forbes. And I guess SCOPEX will be beginning research early this June in Kiruna, Sweden, where the Swedish Space Corporation has agreed to launch a balloon carrying the scientific equipment 12 miles into the sky.
So, let's just put a big Band-Aid over the whole problem. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was gathering from it.
What about breathing that in?
They said it's non-toxic.
So smoking was good for you in the 50s and 40s. Lose weight.
Exactly. So this is just like the first step. They're not actually going to release any of the calcium carbonate into the atmosphere in June. But if it goes well and they're able to, you know, examine the systems that they need to do this, they might actually release a small amount of it and start studying it that way after that. But the exact amount of the calcium carbonate needed to cool the planet is completely unknown, and the SCOPEX scientists can't confirm whether or not this is even the best stratospheric aerosol for the job.
Is this our first attempt here? Now we're going to start building spaceships to Mars because this planet's going to be
uninhabitable.
Thank you.
Yeah. It seriously sounds like that. But thank you so much, Ogama. And here's the thing, too. I'm going to be talking later on in the show about another organization that is suing the Trump administration. And I think we just should put a list together who is not suing Trump, because I think it would be a shorter list.
Well, the people with the balloon aren't. They aren't. Bill Gates. Jeez.
What is this world coming to?
Well, and it was a great shout-out, too, for McGeezy up there. We had... Tasha is a guest on Tuesday, and all the great work that she's doing, and of course, the updates with MN350. Ogama, can you just give that to us one more time? Because that's happening right now.
Yeah, yep. At 6 p.m. tonight, MN350 is hosting a virtual art build. So the art build is to help in making and creating art to support Indigenous-led frontline resistance to Line 3.
Whoa.
So you can get online and make your art from your house. And then there'll be dates and times for drop-off sites announced later.
Awesome. Hey, great update, great news. So thankful for this segment of the show. And I just got to say that was Ogama with the news, and Wendy and I. And we'll be right back with Robert Lilligren of NADCE, Native American, do you remember? Native American Community Development Institute. We'll be right back. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakanja Hade. Wow, each week, Wendy, we really love touching base with Robert Lilligren. He's a NADCE, Native American Community Development Institute. He works tirelessly on Native issues all around the state of Minnesota and the Twin Cities, and we are just so happy to have you on, Robert.
Yeah, Robert, Wendy, bonjour. Thanks for having me.
Oh.
And I appreciate your kind introduction and saying that I work tirelessly, but I'll tell you, I'm always tired. I work tirefully.
Don't we all? Oh, my God.
Right. I just got woke up from a nap, so I'm not going to say.
Right, Grandpa. Yeah,
exactly. Well, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on, and I was wondering if we could just talk a little bit nationally right now and kind of I don't know. Yesterday was an unbelievable day. I'm happy and sad all at the same time that we have to do this. But what were you saying, Wendy? Trump set a record for being impeached the most times, or how did that go?
He's gotten impeached more than he's held office.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. For longer than he's held office. A one term versus two impeachments.
right. Yeah, there's been, four presidential impeachments in U.S. history, and Trump is 50% of those.
Exactly. Oh, my God.
Wow, that's even better.
Oh.
So we had Andrew Johnson, we had Bill Clinton, and Trump.
Right.
Trump.
Yeah.
Goodness.
I did pay attention to those colonized history classes. What is your take? I mean, you know, are we going to have to wait for the Senate until after Biden gets elected? What is your take, and how do you feel about this?
You know, I hope we do. I hope we wait. I mean, the Congress did their due diligence. There has to be consequences, right? If a president is going to encourage sedition, there has to be consequences. Mm-hmm. The Congress acted swiftly, impeached, and it was just to the Senate for a trial. And Senator Clyburn, who I think should play a very prominent role during the Biden administration. I mean, he really launched Biden early on, and his recommendation is to wait 100 days, you know, and give the president 100 days clear field to get those important first initiatives launched. Then they can bring it to trial. It'll never go to trial or be effective trial before the inauguration. And so since it's not going to be that timely, let's give it time so it's not the distraction, it's not disrupting everything that the new President Biden and Vice President Harris are trying to do. And I like that idea, just defer it 100 days. It has to be done so that the whole thing can be punctuated and we can be assured that Trump will not hold federal office again and kind of put an end to that debate. But let's just wait a little bit.
That's a really good idea. And I know... Well, a couple things that I was thinking of. I know there's a lot of other actors that have been helping, whether they're letting people in the back door or giving tours, and hopefully that'll come out too. But this is the first I've heard of 100 Days, and that really makes sense because I remember, well, when Clinton first came in, he got bogged down with gays in the military, and he couldn't run on his agenda. He was dealing with that and very important issue for a very long time in the beginning of his presidency, the first time in.
Right. That is such a good example, Robert, because it shows, you know, what can go wrong if there's a big controversial topic right at the beginning of a presidential term. Because, you know, I'm a two-spirit person myself, and so I paid a lot of attention to that. And, you know, we used to have sort of an unwritten policy, no gays in the military, and we ended up with a law, don't ask, don't tell, you know, and so it was actually worse than before Clinton went into office. And so let's give this new president some time to get his cabinet approval, get his primary policy initiative launched, and then go back and finish this off.
What about these other actors, Robert? I mean, I just can't. I can't believe it. And then I can believe that we have QAnon candidates that are running around in Washington, but are not candidates, but I mean, elected officials, and something has to happen to them too. And I think you can impeach them too, can't you?
You can expel them, I think. I mean, and I'm guessing they could be impeached. I'm not a lawyer, or a legal specialist, but I will say this. When I talked to you, you two last week, it was just the day after. And we were all so kind of shell-shocked the day after the riots and the insurrection. And now we've learned so much more in this last week about how much darker, more sinister, more evil, more well-planned the whole storming of the Capitol was. And it's really ugly. This is going to go down as one of the ugliest days in the history of this country. You know, I read this really interesting perspective. It was from Octavio Cortez, and she had to isolate in this room. You know, they were taken from the floor of the Congress, and they were put together in a room. And so there were people there that she was in close quarters with that, first off, weren't masked, and secondly, had been publicly threatening her and her life. You know, and so she's not feeling safe. She's being protected in an undisclosed location with people who have publicly threatened her. Mm-hmm. And so it's starting to hear from some of the other members of the squad and how unsafe they felt even when they were being isolated and protected because their enemies were in the room with them.
Wow, exactly.
I just thought that was an intense perspective.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting in more and more intense the more information comes out. And I did hear something like that. And also, you know, the no-maskers, that Republican no-maskers wouldn't put a mask on. And now all of a sudden we have three legislators that have COVID. And they're older people, and one has a heart condition.
Yeah, and so like you were saying, there has to be consequences for these folks, you know, and I mean, one of the things that's given me some, hope, is that the right word, is to hear from these corporations, you know, these capitalists, these captains of capitalism, that they're not contributing to the campaigns of the senators and congresspeople who voted against certifying the Electoral College votes.
And that's quite a few. That's quite a few.
And a growing list. And that's a consequence, right? Sure, your actions have consequences. But then we will get into a long conversation about whether some of that behavior was criminal, you know. And so this is going to be, we're going to be talking about this for a long time.
Hey, I'm here with Robert Lilligren of NADCI, Native American Community Development Institute. And when we come back, Robert, I'd like to touch base with you about what's happening at our Capitol and maybe when we're getting closer and closer to the inauguration day, and also what's going on here in the Twin Cities. So hold on. We'll be right back. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Hey, welcome. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hare, which is Distant Thunder in Ho-Chunk, and I'm really happy to have that name, Wendy.
Yes,
and
Dega Curtis gave you that name.
That's right. That's right. And he's the oldest elder in our family. So my colonized name, or I should say my taxpayer name, because it's getting to be that time of year and I just looked at our taxes, is Robert Pilot. And we're really excited here for part two here with Robert Lilligren, who's our weekly guest here on Thursdays. And Robert is with Native American Community Development Institute, among many other things. Welcome back, Robert.
Yeah, thanks, Robert. Thanks, Wendy, for having me.
So one of the things I left with is that, you know, we are all the capitals and governor mansions and things like that are in red alert across all of Turtle Island and here specifically in Minnesota, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was interesting early on when the capital started to get sort of targeted or focused on. A lot of the alerts were about the Minnesota State Capitol in the Wisconsin State Capitol. And of course, now the FBI has broadened that to all 50 states. But I'm really curious. I don't understand why they would single out Minnesota or Wisconsin.
I don't know. It's crazy. But maybe the spotlight's been on us because of what happened with the murder of George Floyd and all the people that came in from Wisconsin. Sure. But yeah, I don't know. Wisconsin, too. I saw they were boarding up their capital like immediately.
Yeah, but it's a sad state of affairs, you know, and when one of the things that I think is happening right now is that a couple of things. One, you know, there's no more kidding ourselves about what this whole Trump movement means and what the hardcore MAGA people mean. I mean, this is about white supremacy and violent insurrection, right? And so the blindfold should be off. We should all see that clearly. And now the fact that we have to protect our state capitals from violent attacks, it's a sad state of affairs.
It is. It really is. And this is an interesting thing, too. Rumor had it in Washington that Bob Kroll might have been out there, but that's just a big rumor because he all of a sudden, out of nowhere, resigned last week.
Right, or he was planning to retire this spring later, and he moved that up to the end of this month. And so for the listeners who don't know, Bob Kroll is the president of the Minneapolis Police Federation, the police union here. And many people believe, myself included, that he is he's one of those people that helps preserve the institution of violent behavior towards people of color, especially Native people and African-American people within the police force. He's a historical sort of a stakeholder. And so many of us, especially after the murder of George Floyd, were calling for the resignation of Kroll. And so now he's transitioning out, and we'll see what comes next. But hopefully this is a indication of changes within the Minneapolis police force and policing, you know, more broadly.
Yeah, just a side note, too, his wife was the noon anchor on the local news, and I know there was a lot of protesting down at that news station, and now she's not on, and they've officially replaced her a couple of weeks ago with an African-American lady. So, you know, I don't know if it's him or her finding a new job in a different place, and he's going along with her. It's total speculation on my part, but very interesting how all these pieces fit and move, Robert.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting to see change. I just saw the new anchor yesterday for the first time. It's really good. And I was really surprised. She was on the air for a while after the civil unrest started here, after the police murdered George Floyd. And I was really surprised. I thought, how can anyone expect her to be impartial when she's so so much a part of this very, very high profile and disturbing activity here?
Well, everything seems to come out in the wash, so we can figure this out and really what's happening there. But hey, why don't we swing into some local stuff, because I know you have some exciting information on Native issues and things that you're working on. Can you talk a little bit about? I mean, I have a list of things that I'd love you to talk about, but
yeah.
the truth thing.
Yeah, so as you know, Robert, Wendy, I can talk a lot. So
we're counting on it.
Thank you. But yeah, so this kind of is, you know, related to the civil unrest, and it really grew right out of the city's response. But I'm part of what's called a Truth and Reconciliation Work Group here in Minneapolis that's been charged by the Minneapolis City Council and Mayor to come up with recommendations about how to move forward in some kind of truth and reconciliation process. And it's a fascinating group. It's one of the smartest sort of big brain think tanky things I've ever been involved in. And it's primarily African Americans and Native Americans, you know, and addressing stolen land and stolen labor. And one of the things that I have just really loved and found fascinating about this conversation is how willing everyone involved, including especially the African American members, are willing to start with the Native voices and start mm-hmm. with the Native stories and mm-hmm. perspectives. And they feel that that's where the whole process needs to start. And it's just such a beautiful example of Native communities, African American communities really supporting each other, you know, not kind of playing the oppression Olympics and, you know, or what I call the race to the bottom, you know, who has it worse.
Right.
But we're saying, okay, the Native people were here. You're the first people, you know, you should go first. Your story should be first. And it's just been a delight. And we have these young, Native sisters on there. People like Melissa Olson, an incredible historian, storyteller, Dr. Kate Bean of the Minnesota Historical Society just joined
cool.
the conversation today. And I just love to sit back and listen to these young people talk about this. They have so much expertise, so much depth of experience, so much knowledge to share. It's really, really rewarding to listen to them shine.
Yeah, wow, that does sound like you got a couple of people. I know Melissa and Kate have been on the show over the years. And Melissa also has a radio show on KFAI.
Right. And so what this work group will do, will come forward with some recommendations to the city. It was supposed to be at the end of this month. We've been doing these really in this intensive meeting schedule. We might have to extend it a little bit. But we'll recommend to the city, here are the things we think you need to do. It could be formalizing a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. It could be recommending some authentic truth-telling, you know, facing mm-hmm. some of the pain. I mean, it's going to be interesting. And I really commend the leadership of the city of Minneapolis. You know, after George Floyd was murdered, something had to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really under the leadership of the Minneapolis City Council Vice President Andrea Jenkins that this Truth and Reconciliation Work Group came together. And I can't help but be proud because Council Vice President Andrea Jenkins is a former staffer of mine when I was the City Council Vice President. So it's fun to see that kind of legacy in action.
That's awesome. Either that or you're a really old person.
That too. But I will point out two of my former City Hall staffers are City Council members today.
Wow.
Both women of color.
Who's that? Yeah,
so. Alondra Connell is the other one.
Oh, okay, cool. Wow.
So that's the first Latina council member.
Exactly. Oh. Wow. So, hey, we got a little more time here. What about the Friends of the Falls? I know we talked, there's some exciting stuff in their article you sent to me. Let's talk a little bit about that with our last few minutes here.
Yeah, so that's through my job at Native American Community Development Institute, NACDI. We've been contracted with this organization called Friends of the Falls, which really represents sort of the power structure in Minneapolis. Their work focuses on the Central Mississippi Riverfront in the city, and specifically there's a lock and dam right there that used to be Dakota sacred sites, many of them that were completely desecrated through industrialization. A place called Spirit Island was completely destroyed. The falls were harnessed. They were destroyed. But the good news is, if there's good news here, is that the lock and dam on the land around it, which is owned by the Army Corps of Engineers,
mm-hmm.
by a law that was just passed, and is going to transfer the lock and the land around it, the ownership, to the city of Minneapolis. And so this group, this interest group, Friends of the Falls, has been sort of positioning themselves to be in the lead of what happens with that land. And this leadership of this group is incredible, where they are committed to centering the Native voice in whatever happens there, and then ultimately up to including ownership of that land, Native ownership. And wow. So we've been working with sort of identified the most authentic voices are those of the people descended from the people who are here.
Right.
We've been engaging with the Dakota tribal leadership and really trying to figure this out. And it's kind of at the beginning and kind of threshold stuff, but I think it has the potential for being really groundbreaking and innovative ways of centering Native voice and advancing the land back movement.
Yeah.
So I really look forward to updating you this as we go on, because I am super excited about this work.
Wow, that is exciting. Is that the last lock before the Stone Arch Bridge?
It is, yeah. It's right just downriver from the Stone Arch Bridge. It's the last lock on the Mississippi, and it was closed
right.
to prevent invasive species, carp,
right.
getting up into the headwaters and into, yeah, of the river.
Yeah, we know that because we have our pontoon down there, and we get sad every time we can't get closer to the Stone Arch Bridge. But
yeah,
we totally understand, because we don't want any carp jumping into our boat and knocking me out. I'm too old for that.
Right. Those are amazing. Yeah, I was actually on the city council when we voted to ask the Army Corps of Engineers to decommission that lock. It took several years to do it. But,
right.
but yeah, so I feel some historical connection to that area as well. But you know, we can never restore what was there, and we can't go back and rewrite history, but we can go forward in a better way. And so it's exciting to be part of that conversation.
Well, excellent. Our time is up with you, and we really appreciate these updates, Robert, and your insight about national politics too. It's really interesting. I just want to give you a peeny geeky. Thank you so much for being on this week, and have a great week, and we'll be talking to you soon.
You too. Chinguat, Wendy, Robert.
Thank you.
All right. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and that was Robert Lilligren of Native American Community Development Institute. We'll be right back after this short break.
We are a Lucent Nation.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 Hotline, and you can call them on Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. at 651-304-9986 for any COVID-19 questions.
Well, Wendy, we're going to be sneak calling them next week and ask them questions on air, live
air. That's interesting. I can't wait to do that.
All right. Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Wendy, we've been trying to cut your section out every week, and the fans love your sacred animal section, so this is...
You better not cut it out.
Hey, cut it out. No, a lot of great positive stuff always said about your show.
And I appreciate that.
Yeah. So I want to introduce my beautiful, awesome wife, Wendy Pilot. Wendy is been an animal advocate for many years, and she's like just a groovy person. So who are you with now?
I'm pretty groovy. My name is Hanaji Hihani, and that means cares for them. And as always, I like to thank Curtis for that beautiful name. I am a volunteer state council member for the Humane Society of the United States, and soon we will be called Humane Policy Volunteers. So they're changing our name.
We have to put up another
I have to write it down so I can read it, because I keep forgetting it. I'm going to be reading from a blog here, from Kitty Block's blog. And Kitty Block is the CEO and president of the Humane Society of the United States.
And a kitty is a sacred animal.
And Kitty is a sacred animal, and it is her first name for real. It's not even fake. And her blog is called A Humane World. And you could go on and just sign up to get blog updates. And as I was saying earlier, when Ogama was giving the news and talking about an organization that was suing the Trump administration, The HSUS and their allies are suing the Trump administration for delisting wolves. And this is an update of January 14th. So just, is that yesterday? Okay, today's the 15th. I'm all confused on which day of the week it is. So
double check.
I think today is the 14th.
Oh, today. Okay, so
I think that was just updated today.
It was just updated today, just a few hours ago. In October last year, the Trump administration stripped federal protections for wolves, giving state managers in the lower 48 states the ability to green light trophy hunting and trapping seasons on these animals. Today, we and our allies sued the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service over this illegal and premature decision that riddled with legal and scientific pitfalls and has the potential to devastate America's still recovering wolf population. So these wolves aren't even fully restored yet and recovering, and they're delisting them so that the states can start trapping and trophy hunting. The Fish and Wildlife Service cited, quote, successful recovery efforts, unquote, as the reason for delisting. The science, however, shows otherwise. Wolves remain threatened nationwide and are, in fact, still absent from 70% of the habitat where they once ranged and could still sustain wolf populations today. Some wolf populations, such as those on the West Coast and in the Southern Rocky Mountains, are especially small and vulnerable and risk disappearing forever because of this delisting decision. I'm going to just talk about here Michigan and Minnesota. Michigan and Minnesota have said they will hold off on a wolf trophy hunting season until they update their respective wolf management plans, but trophy hunting, predator control, and trapping interests, as well as cattle producers, are continuing to push for a hunt there as soon as possible. So they're all just standing in the balance, waiting for this to happen. And a lot of states were just about trapping and hunting these wolves even before the delisting went official. So hopefully with the new Biden-Harris administration coming in, this will be taken care of and the wolves will be back on the endangered species list. We need to keep our wolves here in Minnesota and elsewhere. And as everybody knows, Howling for Wolves is another organization who sponsors our show and who helps with the plight of the wolves here in Minnesota.
We're going to have the doctor on next week, too.
Fantastic. Yeah. Awesome. So, I love that.
So, yeah, I mean, what the heck, Wendy?
You know, here's the thing. The trophy hunting is just a horrible thing because, people just go out and just shoot them randomly. And I've talked about this 100 times over the 3 years that we've been on the air, that herding a wolf pack destabilizes the pack and then even causes more damage and more problems, because then the wolf pack that is not working as well as a family will go and hunt, right? Smaller calves and sheep and things like that. So we need to just keep our wolves here in Minnesota, let them live and flourish.
Yeah, exactly. You know, again, thank you for that great update on our sacred animals. And, you know, a lot of native, if not all, a lot of native communities, clans are the wolf clan. Mm-hmm. And we always like to bring up the fact that our lieutenant governor always brings that up.
That's right. She did. And she even said on our show one time that when a wolf is killed like that or trapped like that, it's like, you know, she's losing a family member. Yep. And it's very hurtful to her.
Yeah, that's the way we believe. And I think before a lot of Europeans were colonized, they felt that same way, too, and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years ago. Mm-hmm. But we're all indigenous to somewhere, and we just happen to be the first people of this continent, Turtle Island. So another great show, Wen.
Yeah, great. Wonderful. Thank you always for letting me talk about animals. And I'm
Yeah, it's awesome.
Don't fire me.
Oh, never. We'd fire Ogama first. Wait, is she still on? No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. Hey, wow, really great show. Robert Lilligren is always a great guest, mm-hmm. and he's our Thursday go-to person. And he has great updates in his political background and the things that he's gone through. I want to give a special shout out to you, Wendy Pilot, and Oglema for really just making this show and supporting the show the best way that you know how. And I really appreciate it because we're doing nothing but growing and amplifying the voice of the sacred animals and the native community. So that is how I would like to end this segment, and I what I would like to do is I would like to end with these thoughts. If you're listening to this show, you are the resistance. From Chief Plenty Coops, the ground on which we stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office. You've been listening to Native Roots Radio, I'm Awake, and I've been your host, Robert Pilot. The revolution is kicking into high gear, and I would like to thank our listening audience and our guests, which really make this show. Again, we are still here. We are the seventh generation free Leonard Peltier.